You're listening to Mahogany Says Show with your host, Mahogany Silverine, on Blog Talk Radio, MahoganySilverine.net. I'm Jane Castle, brilliant and bad. I was my family's fixer. I was the queen of negotiating. I had never met a situation I couldn't talk us out of until my brother crossed the wrong family and they would accept only one payment for that debt, me. For 30 days, I was supposed to give myself to a man so brutal, they called him Demon. I had to follow his rules and demands and be available only to him. When I met him, he had nightmares in his cold green eyes. Except those eyes seemed to thaw a little each time he looked at me. There was so much more to the enigma called Demon, so many things that made him my Damien. Suddenly, the only thing I was worried about losing in 30 days was my heart. Demon Stream, An Unexpected Love by L. Cason, now available on Amazon. Get your copy today. Passion Pride, Alejandra, an interracial romance author, Mahogany Silverine. Alejandra, the son of a Jaguar king, who doesn't want to be king. When he has a premonition of a human woman's fight with dead coyotes, he rushes to save her. He takes her on the run to keep her safe from the cartel, who mistakenly believes that she has stolen from him. Alejandra and Regina fall in love. However, when his father is killed by cartel enforcers, Alejandra is forced to become queen. But Regina feels unworthy to be his queen. Can this reluctant Jaguar king lead his people, protect his homeland, and make Regina, a human, his queen? Passion's Pride, Alejandra, a romance author, Mahogany Silverine. Available on Amazon. Get your copy today. Good evening and hello, everyone. Thank you for joining me on the Mahogany Says Show. I am your host, Mahogany Silverine, and tonight I have a very special read for you. It is one of my best-selling books and actually made number one when it came out in March 2020. So it's been out for 3 years, and this is its book birthday. So I will get to it. I hope that you enjoy it and get a copy for yourself. Chapter 1, Sonora, Mexico, Alejandro. A gentle wind blew as Alejandro padded on four powerful legs, making his way to the edge of one of his favorite pueblos in Alamos, Sonora. His father, Gabor, the king of the La Habana Shifter tribe, came many times to avoid the humans in town. But his curiosity got the better of him. He liked watching the humans, though there were not many around usually. After his daily lessons of fighting and learning how to rule his tribe, Alejandro reveled in his little escapades away from his father and the responsibilities of the village. The sleepy little colonial town, known as the Gem of Sierra Madre, stood the test of time beneath the clear blue sky. The sand-filled cobblestone streets gave way to tall buildings, cafes, hotels, and a beautiful church. This time of year was the music and arts festival for Dr. Alonso Tirado, a famous and local obstetrician and artist. Many would come from other parts of Mexico or the United States, like Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, and California. There was music, food, beautiful paintings and sculptures lining the streets, and many cultural musical celebrity guests and artists attended. The Plaza de Armas seemed more alive during the festival, pulsing with shadow and sun, trees swaying in the wind to the beat of the excited energy that seemed to capture everyone in its wake. The air was filled with rich aromas of bread baking and various foods like tamales and empanadas being prepared. The Rosa Agave Cafe of the Hacienda de los Santos, in particular, had the best smell, and the scent intoxicated Alejandro. His golden eyes shimmered as he stopped to stretch out his broad-chested, 8-foot-long, thickly muscular body beneath a tree and yawned his powerful jaws peacefully. His tawny yellow fur with black spots that looked like rosettes, covering up most of his body on top, with white fur and black spots covering him from under his chin to his belly. He panted lazily. It was humid as usual, and the breeze was refreshing. Alejandro had been sneaking to this spot since he was about 8 years old. His 210-pound alpha male frame throbbed and pulsed with a magical energy that surrounded Alamos. He even dismissed a tortoise a few feet away, making its way toward the town. Even you want to go to the festival, eh, Eagles? He thought to himself. Though the tortoise would make a great stew, he wasn't in the mood for hunting such easy prey. He closed his eyes, relishing the energy and the breeze. Suddenly, Alejandro hears a woman's voice in his head. Hey, that's my bag. Let go of me. His voice jolts through his body, breaking his peaceful rest. His pulse sped, and he opened his eyes and jumped up quickly. Was this a dream? Had he fallen asleep? Seeing nothing with his eyes, he sniffed the air and smelled nothing. It seemed so real. He wondered if she was a jaguar shifter from his pride. No, wait. Our people never venture this far, and never during the day in human form. He closed his eyes again, letting his power wash over him. He could hear the woman's voice, taste her fear, and yet he sensed she was not a jaguar shifter, nor was she an Alamos. He concentrated a little more, seeing a woman, beautiful and familiar, brown skin, with almond-shaped brown eyes, being held by a Mexican man in black jeans and snakeskin boots. There were two other men there, and one was trying to steal the woman's lime-green bag as she fought against her attacker in fear and frustration. Upon closer inspection of the vision, Alejandro noticed the men were not police officers, and according to the sign behind them, they were Nova Hora, 30 miles away. How is this possible? Alejandro thought to himself as his body sprang into action, racing at top speed to one of the village homes. His visions were usually closer to home and mainly of those he knew. This was the first, and it was almost his body had a mind of its own. Before he knew it, he was outside a village home where he found a truck and he sniffed the air. Thankfully, no one was around. He pushed the door open using his weight against it. Once inside, he slowed his breath and began to shift into human form. He grabbed some clothing he found in one of the bedrooms, black pants, brown sneakers, and a t-shirt. As luck would have it, he found the keys to the dusty truck on a hook in the kitchen. He kissed the keys, thanking El Shalom, the jaguar god of his people, for granting him favor. All he knew was that this woman, whoever she is in grave danger, and he needed to get to her quickly. Chapter 2. Regina. Regina held tightly to her carry-on bag, purse, and bus ticket as she waited in line outside the TAP, Transportes Autobuses Pacifico, bus terminal in Tucson, Arizona, to board the bus heading to Sonora, Mexico. The dry heat made her sweat like she was in a sauna, and her face and neck glowed with perspiration. She was glad she used a green deodorant. It really helped on days like this. Her curly, dark brown hair was pulled back into a ponytail at the base of her neck. Her white Mexican peasant blouse with blue flowers and khaki cargo pants stuck to her skin. She wrapped a black hoodie around her waist for later. It was January, but it felt more like June. The only time it was freezing was at night. She was excited to get away from Tucson for a bit of fun, music, art, and food. Mostly the food. She loved Mexican food, especially beef tamales and cheese enchiladas. This would be the first year that she would showcase her own photos she took in Mexico last year. It surprised her that the photo entitled Sunset in Alamos was chosen to be on display in the Museo Costumbrista del Estado de Sonora. It was a picture of a jaguar sitting under a Palo Verde tree, looking peaceful, its golden eyes looking into the distance as the sun set behind it with shades of purple and pink hues in the sky. Rarely seen, especially in daylight, jaguars tend to shy away from humans. She had been hiking just outside of Alamos when she saw the jaguar sitting, softly panting under the tree. She was fortunate to have spotted one. She used the zoom lens on her camera and snapped 3 or 4 shots of the cat, looking at the sun. Then it turned and seemed to look directly at her and into the camera. She snapped the photo immediately, but she wasn't sure if it was her camera or the setting sun, because the cat's eyes glowed. It startled her at first, thinking the jaguar was looking straight at her. She snapped a few more pictures before slowly putting the camera back in her backpack. Mesmerized by the glowing eyes, she could not look away. Then she heard a voice. Oh, hello, hermosa. What are you doing up here all alone? With her heart beating wildly in her chest, she stepped back slowly, her eyes focused on the perfectly still jaguar, his eyes locked with hers. Was she imagining things? She could understand and talk to domestic animals, the occasional cat, dog, or bird. It was something she had been able to do since she was about 9 years old. However, she had never been able to talk to wild animals before. She shook her head. Okay, I think the sun is getting to me. I need to go back to my hotel, she thought to herself. She waited for him to say something else, but the jaguar just watched her. He didn't move or make a sound. Regina let out a sigh. Yeah, girl, you are losing your mind. She turned away and walked a few feet before she heard the voice again. Hasta luego, hermosa. See you later, beautiful. She spun to see if the cat followed her move, but it continued to sit, its yellow gold eyes still glowing and watching her with great curiosity. It tilted its head to one side, and it was as if he was studying her, or even smiling. She thought it strange and a bit creepy. Probably just my imagination, right? She gave a heavy sigh as her heartbeat slowed, the fear that initially made her want to run, now subsiding. The result of that evening was forever captured in a beautiful picture of the jaguar. It had been risky to come in contact with such a large cat, but it was worth it, and Regina looked forward to seeing her photograph in the museum. She boarded the bus with the sign saying Alamos, which would make a stop in Novojoa. She hoped it would not be full, and she would not have to sit next to someone who was too talkative or who snored loudly. Her excitement about the trip began to wane when it took more than 15 minutes just to board the large air-conditioned bus, and she temporarily placed her lime green carry-on shoulder bag on the ground at her right side. It was just to ease the tension in her neck and shoulders. She had not noticed the deeply tanned Mexican man, Esteban Martinez, with long wavy black hair pulled into a low ponytail, that stood behind her carrying a similar bag, and he set his on the ground, but on the left side. His nose was rather large, but his hazel eyes made him somewhat attractive, as did his hair. His gray snakeskin boots complemented his black button-down shirt and jeans. He was joined by two other Mexican men, Jalisco and Pepe Rosales. Two brothers with dark brown eyes and short black hair, dressed in button-down shirts with pointed collars, jeans, and cowboy boots. The three men were drug coyotes from the Darío cartel in Sinaloa. They were coming back from Arizona with the money from sold products in Tucson, packed tightly in their carry-on bags, one blue, one brown, and one lime green. The lime green was an odd color, but Esteban liked bright colors. Each of the men were carrying $5 million in cash in their bags. They had driven to Arizona in a bakery delivery truck from the factory in southern Sonora. The delivery truck held boxes of bread, sweetbreads, and cookies. Beneath the top layer of bread, a second false layer of bread housed the drugs. The truck also had a few boxes of coffee grounds as well to throw off the scent to the dogs if they were stopped and searched. A regular delivery driver would drive the truck back to Sinaloa, and they reasoned traveling by bus was easier for crossing the border than in a car. As the line of bus riders moved forward, Regina reached down and picked up her bag on the left side and boarded the bus with its plush seating. She got a seat next to the back with no one sitting next to her. She settled in, placing her carry-on bag under the seat and put her wireless headphones in her ears so that she could listen to her favorite music. After a few moments, she decided to listen to one of her audiobooks instead. The three Mexican men who had been behind her in line now walked past her. Esteban blew her a kiss. Regina cringed internally and pretended not to notice, turning up her audiobook. Everything about him seemed to spell trouble that she wanted no part of. They settled in, and they sat two rows behind her. However, Esteban decided to walk back to where Regina was sitting. Sexy mama, you looking good. You single baby, he said in Spanish. Regina sighed and ignored him, lowering herself into the seat. Eh, maybe she only speaks English, Esteban, said the teased. Tu hablas español, mija, Esteban shouted across her headphones, noticing her headphones were in her ears as other passengers looked back at them. Regina bit her lip and groaned before yelling back in Spanish, yes, and I am not single. She was single, but she wasn't about to tell him that. If she smiled, he would take it as an opening and keep passing her. I don't see no ring, Esteban pointed out. Hey, leave her alone, cabrón. She's too good looking for your ugly ass, Esteban, Jalisco said. Esteban took off his hat and swatted at his friend. Cállate, cabrón. The Rosales brothers just laughed as Esteban put his head back on and returned his attention to Regina. He leaned in, his big nose inches from hers. How about we get to know each other better? I'm a nice guy. Tengo mucho dinero. I take you to dinner in Alamos, eh? He smelled of sweat and some cologne Regina didn't like or recognize. She closed the gap between them as if she would whisper in his ear. Instead, she spoke in a loud but firm voice in Spanish. Fuck off, big nose. I'm not interested. She leaned back and glared at him, daring him to say anything else. Everyone who heard her began to laugh, especially his two friends, Jalisco and Pepe. Esteban stood up and sneered, puta. He winked at her and pursed his lips, sending her another air kiss before returning to his seat. He liked feisty women, especially dark-skinned ones. Her rudeness only excited him more, and he was determined to pursue her again in Alamos. It was a small town, and she'd be easy to find. Shaking her head and laughing to herself, she sat back and resumed her audiobook, The AI Who Loved Me, by Alyssa Cole. It was going to be a long trip, and at least 8 hours, and she was all set with a comfy seat that adjusted back in a row all to herself. When the bus stopped in Novojoa, the driver used the intercom to tell the passengers to get off the bus with their carry-on bags for a 30-minute layover. Everyone stood up and collected their things and prepared to get off the bus. Esteban felt a bit paranoid as he stepped off the bus and noticed the Novojoa police officers with dogs sniffing the luggage bags on the bus. It was part of the random searches that the governor of Sonora insisted take place in order to fight the drug and human trafficking problem. He subconsciously patted his bag that hung from his shoulder. He noticed it felt lumpy, so he opened the bag. Much to his surprise, there was no money, just snacks, batteries, water bottles, and a blue windbreaker jacket. Hijo de puta, he cursed and slammed the bag down. He looked around the terminal. ¿Qué pasó, Efe? Pepe asked. Somebody switched the bag, Esteban sneered. ¿Cómo? Alisto asked. Esteban looked around the terminal frantically before spotting Regina as she came out of the ladies' bathroom with an identical bag across her shoulders. He narrowed his eyes. Puta! Vámonos, muchachos. Get the girl, he pointed at Regina. Regina looked up just in time to see the three men rushing toward her, their faces contorted in anger. She turned to run back to the bathroom, searching for a police officer or security along the way. Before she could reach the bathroom, Esteban grabbed the bag, pulling her back toward him. Hey, that's my bag. Let go of me, she yelled. Esteban yanked the bag up and over her shoulders, and Pepe held her wrist. She pulled away, freeing her wrist. She stepped back her right leg firmly behind Pepe's legs, twisting forcefully to the right, throwing him to the ground, and knocking Esteban down along with the bag. Jalisco grabbed her wrist from behind and Gina stomped on his left instep, causing him to howl in pain. As he bent down, she elbowed his nose, breaking it, and blood spurted out. Before Regina could run, she heard the unmistakable sound of a gun click. People standing around screamed and scattered in all directions. Enough, Esteban shouted. You switched the bag. Who are you working for, huh? Before Regina could answer, a man cold-cocked Esteban from behind, and he hit the ground with a thud. He looked down at Regina. ¿Estás herido? Are you hurt? His voice seemed familiar and his eyes had a golden glow. It mesmerized Regina. He was handsome with his deep-set eyes, black hair, and rough beard. Despite his ill-fitting clothes, she shook her head no. Ven conmigo. Good, come with me, he said as he held out his hand. She placed her hand in his and felt a surge of power sweep through her body and her knees buckle. He caught her and pulling her close, he pivoted with an unnatural speed just in time to kick Pepe in the head as he was trying to grab Regina from below. With a quick glance and another swift turn, he kicked Esteban's gun away from Jalisco, who was just about to fire a shot, all while holding Regina in his arms gently. Regina couldn't help but take in his scent. He smelled a sweat and sweet musk. Where did you come from? Regina asked in Spanish after a few seconds. No time. Vámonos. La policía viene. He smiled and grabbed the green bag off the floor, handing it to Regina. Thanks for the assist, but I had him right where I wanted him, she said with a smile. Claro que sí, hermosa. Of course you did, beautiful, he beamed. Hermosa? Where have I heard that before? She thought to herself. I need to get back on the bus. My luggage. Do you want to get a estet? Both men were coyotes to drogas. His accent and manner made Regina smile despite what just happened. I can just explain to them, she reasoned. They were chasing you. You must have something they want, he said in English as he led Regina out of the back of the terminal to the truck he borrowed in Alamos. They were flirting with me and coming on pretty strong back in Tucson. It was nothing I couldn't handle, though. Maybe I just pissed them off. I mean, I don't have anything of value in my bag. She stopped suddenly. She stopped suddenly walking, and she opened the bag to find it filled to the top with cash, stacks of $100 bills. Regina gasped. Gay. Isn't my bag. I must have picked up theirs by mistake, she sighed. Ah, then that's what they were looking for then. Come, I will take you to Alamos. I know the police chief. You can turn in the money to him and you can keep it. Or you can keep it. Wait, how do you know I'm going to Alamos? The festival. Why else would a North American beauty come to Mexico this time of year? True, but I can't keep this money. They will hunt you down no matter what you do with it. So you may as well keep it. But you will be safe with me. Somehow, Regina believed him. He was a stranger, yet something about him was different. The way he moved, the way he spoke, and his eyes. Something about them was very familiar. There's no way this man is human. Human eyes don't glow like that, she thought to herself, not to mention the power she felt when she touched him. He opened the passenger side of the truck for her. I'm Regina Hightower, by the way. Mucho gusto, Regina. I am Alejandro. Chapter 3. Alejandro y Regina. Alejandro drove back to Alamos deep in thought. His mind was trying to recall where he had seen this woman before and why he was able to have a vision of her. She was exquisite, but she was human. Her brown skin looked bronze in the sunlight. The tightly coiled hair had come undone during the fight with the drug coyotes and now blew wildly around her heart-shaped face. Alejandro could not help but notice her full, soft-looking lips. He was definitely attracted to her, but there was something more. She handled herself pretty well until one of the men pulled a gun on her. He knew she had the heart of a warrior that rivaled the women in his village. He also knew those men would find her in Alamos. She'd definitely stand out. He had to take her someplace safe, like home, his home, hidden deep in the subtropical Sonoran Desert. No human has ever ventured into his village, nor has one ever been invited. However, Regina was no ordinary human. She was special, and it was not by accident that he had seen her in the vision. Then it hit him. She's the photographer that took pictures of me last year, he thought to himself. Regina suddenly looked at Alejandro. What did you say? I took pictures of you? Alejandro quickly pulled the truck to the side of the road and turned to face Regina. I said nothing aloud. Can you hear my thoughts? I guess I can. It usually only happens with animals, though, not people. And besides, I would have remembered taking your picture. I only took pictures of local people. Then I went hiking and spotted a jaguar. He was sitting under a Palo Verde tree. So you must mean someone else. Unless, wait, what are you? Regina asked. Alejandro laughed as he remembered. I was sitting in my favorite spot and I heard your camera. So I turned to see where the noise came from, and I saw you. I didn't want you to be afraid, so I just watched your emotion. Regina's eyes widened. Her pulse sped, and she shook her head in disbelief. That's what I heard in my head, Hermosa. I thought it was my imagination. Are you saying you're a jaguar? Alejandro finished her sentence as his dark brown eyes glowed to a golden yellow. How? Regina said weakly. It amazed her. It has always been with my people. According to the elders, we were blessed by El Shalom, the god of the Mayans, with the power to become jaguars. The jaguar is celebrated, as it represents power, ferocity, and valor to protect the land. Jaguars can see into the dark hearts of man, and my gift is to see things that will happen hours, days, months, or even years before. Sometimes in dreams and sometimes when I am awake. My people have lived in the Sonoran Desert for hundreds of years. So what are you, Hermosa? Surely you are more than human. How can you hear my thoughts? Oh, I'm human, trust me. I don't really know. It's a gift I inherited from my father, Abel Hightower. He was a veterinarian in Tucson. He always told me to keep my ability a secret and that animals were sacred. He believed it was our job to help others and the plight of animals, to help others understand the plight of animals, to honor them for their sacrifice of feeding and clothing us, because mankind has not only dominion over the earth, but the responsibility to take care of the earth and its animals. That is fantastico, hermosa. Your father is a wise man. He sounds very much like my father. Alejandro smiled. Yes, I have always thought so, too. He's tough, but he was fair. I missed him so much. He died a couple of years ago in a car accident. My mother also passed when I was very little. My dad remarried when I was about 8 years old. My stepfather, Isabel, is from Chihuahua, and she has been great. She taught me to speak Spanish. Oh, lo siento mucho. I cannot imagine losing my father at such a young age. You are a strong woman, hermosa. I wondered how you speak Spanish so well. My Mexican mother raised you. Regina blushed and looked down at her hands. No one but her father ever called her beautiful. Well, Isabel did too, but the men she came across lately have been crude and vulgar. She kept to herself mostly. She was studious and quiet. She loved to read and take care of animals. Her best friend is her black and tan, long-haired Chihuahua, Chichi, who loved to stand on her hind legs and do her version of dancing to cumbia music. Thanks. So, how did you learn English? Regina said, failing to conceal her shyness, though Alejandro found it endearing. Then I learned English by watching television. I also snuck away to Alamos and other places where tourists visit, and I listened to them, plus the artists and musicians who come from the United States. Are you married or have a boyfriend I need to know about, hermosa? Regina felt her cheeks flush and her face felt hot. She thought she detected a note of jealousy in his voice. No, I guess I haven't really made that a priority. Most guys seem to think I'm strange, but because I love animals so much, but I also work a lot. Ah, and what kind of work do you do, hermosa? I'm a conservationist, a member of ACC. That's the Arizona Conservation Corps. I was Mama Izzy's idea to help me become more social at first when I was 15. Excuse me. I enjoyed the camping trips and working with the Ancestral Lands program so much that I volunteered every summer until I was 18, and they offered me a job. It was part-time while I was in college, which I completed with grants and scholarship awards from ACC and AmeriCorps. Then I went full-time after graduation. I am also a veterinarian assistant at my dad's clinic on the weekends. Mama Izzy runs it now. You're a busy woman. It is admirable, but you need to have some fun too, yes? Yes, that is why I'm here for the festival. And one of my pictures, Sunset in Alamos, is going to be on display at the museum. It was chosen in the photo contest I entered. It's one of the pictures I took of you in jaguar form. Oh, magnifico. I will have to check it out, but for now, I need to get you to a safe place. Both men will look for you and others. But I need luggage, and I have hotel reservations. Don't worry. You can cancel the reservation. You will not need your luggage. Those men will look for you in my village. They won't look for you. We have clothing, shelter, and food. What more will you need? I'm grateful for your help, but do you have electricity? Of course. We live in an adobe house. I have a television and computers, radio, and indoor plumbing. We are not primitive. We are very modern, Hamilton. Oh, okay. Regina lamented and poked her bottom lip out, her lip out. She wanted her clothes and her things, especially her hair products. She was a black woman, and she hated having dry, frizzy hair in this desert air. Alejandro chuckled when he noticed her face. She was cute, even when disappointed. Well, we can stop on the way to pick up some things you might need. Also, there is a weak cell signal where I live, so they can use your phone to track you, right? You're right. I need to get a burner phone so I can at least let Mama Izzy know I'm safe. You're very smart, hermosa. Me gustas mai más. Regina was liking him more and more, too. She looked at him and smiled. He made her feel special and protected. At this time, I'm going to take a break from reading, and we'll listen to a couple of more commercials as well as some music. So we'll be right back with the reading of Passion's Pride, Alejandro.
Those who knew the streets in Houston knew one thing for sure. The four brothers of the Kinsey Cartel were crazy as hell. The eldest two, Tramell and Tristan, a.k.a. Trey and Tripp, might have just been the craziest of all. Crossing any of them could end your life. No one messed with them until a pair of best friends, Shamar and Sin, came in and turned their world upside down. Shamar Parker, a quiet college girl, found herself given to Trey as collateral. Trey's captive would soon become his lover, and he vowed never to let her go. With an attitude the polar opposite of her best friend, Sin Murray stormed into Tripp's life, demanding the return of her friend. In the process, she also stormed into his heart, and Tripp knew he had to lock her down. But the Kinsey's old habits died hard, and their lifestyle threatened to push the women they wanted most out of their lives. Can their love survive the streets? The Beauty of This Street Love, A Texas Tale, by L. Cason, now available on Amazon. Get your copy today. Henry Santana, a misunderstood millionaire with a playboy reputation, will do whatever it takes to transform historic Newport, Rhode Island's waterfront into the world's largest five-star resort community. Victoria Hathaway, an introverted bookseller, is fearful of losing all she holds dear, a thriving business along Newport Harbor and her multi-generation colonial home that stands in the way of the resort community. Sparks fly when Victoria meets Henry, a handsome stranger, until she discovers he's the one who is threatening to take her land. Desperate and determined, Victoria struggles to save her home and her livelihood while ignoring her growing attraction for the man who threatens to destroy it all. The Prodigal's Desire, Book 1 of the Seaside Desire series by author Valerie Lynn. Available on Amazon in both Kindle and paperback. Get your copy today.
Show. You are listening to Passion's Pride Alejandro, being read by me, Mahogany Silver Ring. Maybe he was just being nice because he found a kindred spirit in her because they both have abilities, though in her opinion, his is way cooler than hers. What about you? Are you married? Me? No, but I suppose my parents want me to marry. That all the girls in my village are not interested in anything outside of our village. Música, arte, fútbol, bailando y hablando inglés, you know? Sí, pero you snuck out to learn these things. Maybe you should have snuck them out with you. Oh, no, hermosa. They will not go against their fathers, and I would never ask them to. My father forbids it. Let's put some gas in the truck and take it back to the owner. Take it back? I borrowed it from a neighbor. I see, and does this neighbor know you borrowed it? No, but I saw you were in trouble, and I had to get to you. You saw me how? In my vision. Interesting. Does it happen a lot? Sometimes, yes. Regina wondered what the connection was between them, but didn't want to question it too much. Never in her wildest dreams would she have thought something like this possible. They stopped at a store, and much to Regina's dismay, there were no products for her hair. So she bought aloe vera. It was a good thing that she had some jars of shea and cocoa butter in her purse. It filled the truck with gas. Regina bought a burner phone, ditching her precious cell phone. After returning the truck to a surprised but grateful farmer, Regina called Mama Izzy and let her know she made it to Alamos and she would call her tomorrow. It was a good thing she had her hiking boots on because they had to go on foot for 3 miles to get to his village. The sun set quickly, and Regina became cold in the night air, so she put her hoodie on. Alejandro was quite warm as his body naturally adjusts to the temperature. He put his arm around Regina as they walked together. Her body flooded with heat from his touch in certain parts throughout in anticipation. Regina has never seen this part of the Sonoran Desert. It was green with various plants like poppies, lupines, palo verde trees, cactus, and catclaw. Alejandro could have made it home faster in jaguar form, but since Regina was human, walking is all they could do. Not that he might at the time, or the company. He enjoyed their conversation, and her touch. She fit nicely to his body. He was an inch taller than she was, and she smelled of cocoa butter. It delighted his senses, and his appreciation pushed at the zipper of his pants. He longed to make her his. She was the most interesting woman he'd ever met. In his village, the women are taught submission and strength. His mother, however, was an alpha female who helped his father in every way. She had a mind of her own, stood up for herself, and was always taking care of others. Though Regina could be shy at times, blushing when he called her beautiful, he knew instinctively she would make a great alpha like his mother. The problem would be that she is human, though gifted. She was not a jaguar. Still, he wanted her and was prepared to go against his father so that he could protect her. Was he worried about her keeping his secret? Not especially. She had a secret of her own. Chapter 4. The La Habana Tribe of Mesa Esmeralda. When they were about a mile from the village, Alejandro saw a construction sign. Future home of Grupo Cisterno plant. No, they can't build it here. It's too close to my own. What's the problem? It's just a bakery plant. You don't understand. The bakery is just a firm for the Carrillo Hotel. Are you serious? Sí. I've been keeping an eye on them for a long time. This family has its lands and everything. There has to be a way to stop them. Alejandro and Regina came to a river that seemed to flow from a mountain. At the foot of the mountain, Regina noticed the river flowed alongside it. They walked around the mountain and found a waterfall at the end of the river that flowed down into a valley that looked like a lush green jungle. Bienvenido a Mesa Esmeralda, Alejandro said proudly. It's incredible, Regina gushed as Alejandro helped her down the steps on the side of the waterfall. At the bottom of the waterfall, many people gathered to see the dark brown-skinned woman that came with Alejandro. Their clothing was bright and colorful, peasant dresses and blouses on the women, and bright-colored shorts and jeans on the men. The temperature here was warmer, and Regina took off her hoodie and tried to smooth down her curly hair as much as possible. She was nervous. But Alejandro took her hand and led her through the crowd of people. Some of the children smiled and waved. She waved, smiling back at them. However, the thoughts of the jaguar shifters in Spanish filled Regina's mind all at once, and she struggled to shut them out. Who is that? Where do you find a black woman? Is she from the jaguar tribe? She smells human to me. Why would he bring a human here? So many questions filled her head that it hurt. Regina took a deep breath in and blew it out slowly to quiet her mind. What's wrong, Hermosa? Alejandro thought to himself, knowing she could hear his thoughts. He wished he could hear hers. I can hear their thoughts. All of them, she replied aloud. Alejandro rubbed her temples and kissed her forehead. It seemed to soothe her aching head and distracted her. They continued on. The voices stopped completely when Alejandro and Regina stopped at the edge of the jungle. A small town appeared full of pueblo and adobe houses of all sizes. A park, a marketplace with grocery stores, coffee shop, furniture store, a tattoo parlor, a school, a library, and a church. There were no cars, and everything looked to be within walking distance. They walked down the main street and stopped just outside a 6,000-square-foot adobe house surrounded by an adobe wall with a wooden gate at the entrance. Beautifully landscaped with yucca plants, white stones and cacti of various sizes gave way to sidewalks and walkways made of stone and brick. Alejandro and Regina were followed by about 300 of the 500 tribe members as they made their way to the entrance. Alejandro's father came out with his arms crossed over his broad chest. His handsome face was a mixture of disappointment and relief. His salt and pepper hair was shaved around the sides and back and longer on the top. The longer part was pulled back into a ponytail at the top of the back of his head. His thick, muscular arms gleamed in the moonlight. The tribe knelt in silent reverence of their leader. He gave Regina the slightest glance before glaring at his son, who ran off and was gone so long that he had begun to worry. "Where have you been? And who is this woman?" he said in Spanish, his voice deep and powerful. Regina gulped and squeezed Alejandro's hand, but stood tall and proud next to him. "Damn, he's the king's son?" she thought to herself. "I have been in Alamos, and this woman needs our help." Alejandro answered in Spanish. "Oh, my son, I am so glad you are home. Your woman is exquisite. And look at her skin," Alejandro's mother said in Spanish as she came from behind his father to hug her son. She looked over Regina and smiled at her, giving her a warm hug. "Anka, must you always interrupt me? I was talking to our son." The king bellowed in Spanish. "I'm not stopping you. I'm giving my son and his wife a hug," Annika said in Spanish, with a wink at Regina. "Oh, no. No estoy su esposa," Regina began. "Gracias, mama," Alejandro said, cutting off Regina. "This is Regina Hightower. She's a human who can hear our thought in this form and in our jaguar form. But she is in danger and is under my protection. Anyone who tries to harm her will answer to me," Alejandro replied in Spanish. Regina could not help but smile at his answer. Though she wasn't too happy about him cutting her off, she understood and let it slide. "My son has spoken. She is welcome and now is under the protection of the tribe too," King Gabor said in Spanish with a smile and obvious pride. Perhaps his son has finally listened to him and he is ready to lead. He could only hope. Alejandro turned to Regina. "These are my parents, King Gabor and Queen Anka Cadmael." "Mucho gusto," Regina said with a slight bow. The king and queen dismissed the crowd of tribe members and escorted Alejandro and Regina into a large, adobe-style house. It had 4 bedrooms and 4 bathrooms. Yucca plants and various cacti surrounded the home inside the gate. Mosaic tiles and wood floors inside the house gave way to the large fireplace in the living room. Large windows with wooden shutters on the inside were throughout the house, and the master suite had his and her bathrooms. There was a medium-sized kitchen with modern appliances like a double-door refrigerator and an industrial-looking stove. A wooden dining table with hand-carved chairs and printed pillows on them is where Alejandro gave his parents the details of the day's events over dinner prepared by the family's cook, Esperanza. It surprised Alejandro how well they took to Regina, especially his father, who was always pushing to choose a bride among the tribes who would be queen when Alejandro became king. They agreed Regina should keep money and put it to good use, as she agreed to help stop the building of Grupo Sustento plant. If she could get the ACC to declare this land ancestral ground, the land and the animals would be protected. Jaguars are rare. There are none in the United States, and building here would displace the animals from their natural home. Alejandro gave Regina a tour of his family home as the queen prepared a room for her. She marveled at the wrought iron candle chandeliers and the large oval tubs in the bathrooms with the mosaic tiles. There was a small fireplace in each of the master suite bathrooms. Most, if not all, of the furniture was handcrafted. The shellacked large beams of wood supported the ceiling. In the backyard, there was a large saltwater swimming pool with a built-in jacuzzi on the side. When they arrived in his bedroom, Regina looked at the posters of bands and movies on the walls and spotted an acoustic guitar in the corner next to the small fireplace. "Do you play?" "See, would you like me to play something for you, Hermosa?" Alejandro picked up his guitar and motioned for Regina to sit on his king-sized bed. He sat in a chair across from the bed near the fireplace and played "I Can't Help Falling in Love with You" by Elvis. His eyes locked with hers as he sang the song in Spanish. When he finished, Regina's eyes welled with tears. She wiped one that slid down her cheek and clapped. "That was beautiful," she breathed. "It was one of my father's favorite songs." Alejandro noticed her tears and quickly put down the guitar. Rushing to her, he took her hands in his. "I know, Hermosa. I didn't mean to make you sad." "You didn't. It was just so beautiful. My father would have loved it," she whispered before quickly changing the subject. "Does no one drive here? I don't see any cars." "No, not really. Everything is so close by. At an animal farm, we can run very fast." "So how do you know how to drive?" "Video games," he beamed. Regina laughed at the serious look on his face. "You're fascinating and so different from anyone I've ever met, Alejandro." You do that, Mosa. Later that night, Regina fell into one of the bedrooms that was made up for her. It had a four-poster bed and walk-in closet remarkably filled with clothing in her size. A small, beautifully decorated bathroom with mosaic-tiled shower was near the bed on the right side. She showered, braided her hair in a French braid, and put on the chiffon blue nightgown that Queen Anka left for her on the bed. It was not something she would usually wear, but her clothes were back in Alamos, something she regretted, but with her life at stake, it was a small matter. Just as she got into bed, Alejandro knocked on the door. Come in. Buenas noches, hermosa. Do you need anything? Alejandro's eyes glowed as he gazed at Regina. She was naturally beautiful without makeup. He longed to kiss her and hold her in his arms. Regina swallowed hard, licking her lips unconsciously at the sight of Alejandro's bare chest and arms. He was only wearing a pair of blue shorts and he was barefoot. His body was lean with muscles and his tan skin looked smooth. No, I'm good, thanks. Why didn't you tell me you were a prince? Alejandro laughed softly. If I had said I was the son of a jaguar king who lives in the desert, would you have come with me? Well, when you put it that way, no. That is why I did not tell you, hermosa. But I hope you will forgive me. I brought you here, and now you know. I meant what I said. You are under my protection, and I will never leave you. He whispered to her as he sat on the side of the bed. He took her hand and kissed it softly. You are mine, even though you do not know it yet. He thought to himself, knowing she would hear him. Regina blushed, and her face and body felt hot. But she forced herself to look directly into his mesmerizing eyes. Her nipples hardened, appearing through the thin material of her gown. She was not sure how to answer his thoughts, so she chose to ignore them for now. Thank you for saving me today. I'm honored to be the first human here. I will cherish this always, and your secret is safe with me. Gracias, hermosa. I appreciate your discretion. I'm sorry I told your secret, but only to my tribe because I wanted them to see and know how special you are. And they will tell no one else. It's all right, Alex. May I call you Alex? Or do you prefer your majesty? You may call me whatever you want, hermosa. I hope you don't mind me calling you hermosa because I will not stop. Alex, it is then. No, I don't mind. What woman doesn't want to be called beautiful? I should get some rest now, though. It's been quite a day. Good night, Alex. Alejandro kissed her cheek softly. Sweet dreams, hermosa. Regina pulled his face to hers and kissed his lips softly, and Alejandro deepened the kiss. Regina let her hands explore his arms and back as he moved from her lips to her neck, causing a soft moan to escape. Mi hermosa, now and always, he thought to himself. Despite her arousal, she suddenly pulled back from him. Did I do something wrong? He whispered. No, I haven't. You're a virgin, hermosa. Yes, she said, pulling the covers up. What are you smiling at? I like that you are a virgin. It is not common for human women to wait. I want to be your first and only when you are ready. And you will. You will be mine. Wait, what? You're a virgin too? Does that surprise you, hermosa? Yes, actually. Our choir is quite different. We do not have sex until we have chosen a mate. Some may not follow that, but most of us do. I have dated, though never wanted to give myself to any woman unless I knew she would be mine forever. I am the son of a king. I cannot just have anyone. And I want you, hermosa. Regina's face was hot again. I want you too, Alex. But I don't know if I'm good enough to be with you. I'm a human, and you'll be king someday. You are more than enough for me. My parents adore you. Anything you don't know, you will learn. In mi corazón, ya eres mía. Mi hermosa, in my heart, you are already mine, my beauty. Alejandro gave Regina a final chaste kiss, good night, and whispered in her ear, sweet dreams, hermosa. Chapter 5. Alamos Bonita Resort. That's stupid. You let a woman steal my money? Where is that beach now? Javier Carrillo yelled through the phone. Lo siento mucho, jefe. We will find her. She was working with someone. Her luggage came to the terminal, but so we knew she was coming here, but she has to pick it up eventually, Esteban pleaded. Pinche cabrón, you better search every hotel. Now I have to wire another $5 million to pay off the mayor. Find the negrita and cabron working with her. I want them dead, and I want my money returned, or it's yours. Javier warned before slamming his iPhone on his desk. Puta pera. Cefa, you go to the bus, Kamala, while Jalisco and I check the hotel, Esteban ordered. CFA, how's your concussion? CFA asked. Don't worry about my head, cabron. Worry about your ass if we don't find that puta. CFA. Now, cabron. But it's late, boss. Not my problem. It's the best time to get it, see? When they think no one will be there. Vamanos! Esteban said as he shoved Pepe towards the door. Pepe, afraid to catch a bullet, stumbled back and went out of the door. He was halfway down the hall when he realized he'd left his hotel key in the room. Mierda! He cursed in Spanish. Esteban made a few more calls, and when he was done, 10 more men, mostly enforcers and mercenaries, prepared to make their way to Alamos, armed to the teeth. Chapter 6, Carrillo Compound, Chihuahua, Mexico. Javier and his sister Rosa Carrillo, head of the deadly Carrillo cartel, were second generation. Their late father, Francisco Bustamante Carrillo, put the cartel together in the late 70s. The cartel comprised six families and those who worked for them. They owned several legitimate businesses, from restaurants, gyms, and nightclubs to nail salons. They spread from Chihuahua, Durango, Hermosillo, and southern Sonora down to Nuevo León, Veracruz, and Oaxaca. Javier was looking to build in northern Sonora and Baja California. The Hernandez family controlled Durango. The Hermosillo family controlled Hermosillo, Sonora. And the Martinez family controlled Nuevo León, while the Garcia controlled Oaxaca and Veracruz. The Carrillo cartel bought stock, and Rosa had a seat on the board of a corporation that comprised legitimate businessmen and women from Brazil and the United States, called the Grupo Sistema Food Company. The corporation bought 15 other brands, which produce and distribute everything from bread, cookies, and snack cakes to health and wellness brands over the last 10 years. They operate in 33 countries around the world, including Africa, Asia, and Europe. Group Sustento's annual sales reached $10 billion this year. However, the cartel's drug and human trafficking brought in up to $2 million a day. The Carrillo family also has ties with the Azteca tribe of Anaconda shapeshifters, the natural rivals of the La Habana tribe of jaguars. Twins Javier and Rosa grew up wealthy and learned to be ruthless. Abused by their father for most of their formative years after he killed their mother, Alicia, Rosa injected him with a large dose of potassium chloride when she was 20 years old. It caused him to go into cardiac arrest, and he died shortly after. More deadly than her high-strung brother, Rosa is highly intelligent and a psychopath. She got a bachelor's degree and an MBA in business. Javier is a sociopath and narcissist who only prefers the company of his sister and his two bull mastiffs, Bruno and Apollo. Rosa always cleaned up after Javier with his frequent outbursts and his shoot first and ask questions later mentality. She was the only one who could calm her brother down, and he listened to her every word. Many of the people who worked for them were more afraid of Rosa. Javier was loud and angry, but Rosa was calculating and manipulative. If she wanted you dead, you would be, and you would never see it coming. She helped her brother, along with their cousins Ramon, Hector, and Josefina, to build up legitimate businesses across Chihuahua. They made Chihuahua one of the most dangerous states in Mexico with the highest murder count. They owned their father's sprawling California 1940 colonial-style home on 20 acres. Impeccably preserved with its stone, mosaics, wood, stained glass ceiling in the foyer, and windows in the master bath, stove and marble floors, high ceilings, and ornate wrought iron design on the staircase and patio railing. It's an architectural jewel. Six bedrooms and 7.5 bathrooms with central hall, two levels high, with a lamp and a chimney made of pink quarry. From there, you have access to the living room, dining room, kitchen, and study, which is Javier and Rosa's office, living room, and service areas. Though the main staircase, you have access to the basement, where there is a game room, or you can go up to the upper floor where there is a private area that consists of a master bedroom that Javier and Rosa shared with a large living room and dressing room made of the wood, a fine wood, and a double bathroom with a sauna. If anyone thought it odd that they shared a bedroom, they kept their comments to themselves or came up missing. Another bedroom with a dressing room and bathroom. Three more had walk-in closets, and one bedroom had the terrace. The third level was a gym yoga room with stained floors. and panoramic views. Javier wanted to sell it after their father died, but Rosa insisted they keep it, having it redecorated and maintaining its upkeep. Javier slammed his white iPhone on the marble desk in his office. ¿Qué pasó, hermano? Rosa asked. Los estúpidos idiotas. Esteban and his crew lost $5 million of the 15 that was going to Alamos to some Americana Grita and a Mexicano cabrón who Esteban said is not human. Cálmate, mi amor. I will call Cleo to see if the man is from his tribe, but I doubt that anyone from his tribe is involved. We give them more than enough to keep them happy, but he may know of another tribe. Mierda, there is more than one tribe of snakes? No, Javier, not snakes, jaguars. Since when? Since forever. They have never interfered here before. And how do you know this? I make it my business to know as much about everything, so no one stands in our way, Rosa said coldly. Javier walked over to Rosa and, pulling her into a standing position, cupped her bottom and kissed her deeply. That is why I love you. You always take care of everything. I don't know what I would do without you, he whispered. Don't worry, mi amor. I will handle this, she whispered back, kissing him again softly. And this has been the reading of Fashion's Pride, Alejandro. Written by me, Mahogany Silverrain. I hope you have enjoyed reading the first 6 chapters. I wasn't actually going to read that many. However, I got so into it, I decided why not. But that should give you enough that if you're interested in reading it, it's available on Amazon, both in Kindle and in paperback. I hope that you have enjoyed listening, and I will be happy that if you really like the book, that you'll go and get it. So Mahogany says, read Passion's Pride, Alejandro. And I wish you all a great evening with peace, blessing, and love. Mahogany Says Show with your host, Mahogany Silverrain, on Blog Talk Radio, MahoganySilverrain.net. Thank you and good night.